Good morning. Like I said, like Tim said, my name is Liz. I am going to just speak a little bit about promoting health and some of the stakeholder engagement activities that have been going on around the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations as it relates to public health. So I have no disclosure to offer, no conflicts of interest. In terms of learning objectives, so this presentation will kind of focus on stakeholder engagement activities during the actual trade agreement negotiations and possible strategies for increasing meaningful public health engagement in negotiations. So protecting or ideally promoting public health objectives in trade policy, specifically trade agreement negotiations, is certainly not a new struggle, something that's been going on for decades now. But this new generation of mega trade agreement negotiations, specifically the TPP and the TTIP, arguably create a new urgency around ensuring public health-informed deliberations. So the purported goal of the TPP is a trade agreement that will open markets, set high standard trade rules, and address 21st century issues with in the global economy. And the USTR and the administration have clearly signaled that the hope is that this that the TPP will kind of establish a new model or framework upon which future trade agreements will be negotiated. So the implications of any agreement that may actually come to fruition will potentially extend well beyond the parties to the agreement itself. So the TPP negotiations were launched in early 2010 in Melbourne, and to date there's been 19 full rounds completed with numerous chief negotiator, ministerial leaders, and other intersessional meetings. The full rounds of TPP negotiations seem to have ended with the 19th round in Brunei in August 2013. And then throughout 2014, there have been publicly announced negotiations, like I said, limited to those sort of chief negotiators or ministerial meetings, most recently in Sydney last month, without really any meaningful formal stakeholder engagement opportunities. However, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership negotiations between the U.S. and the EU do kind of continue with those formal stakeholder opportunities, and round 8 is anticipated in Brussels in December. So the TPP includes Canada, Mexico, Peru, Chile, New Zealand, Australia, Malaysia, Vietnam, Singapore, Brunei, Japan, and the United States. These 12 countries are the current parties. Japan was the most recent to join. There's been speculation about other countries along the way, including South Korea joining, but nothing has really developed in terms of their actual participation in negotiations. So what's at stake for health? So the list of potential health implications for a TPP agreement is quite long and pretty terrifying. The elephant in the room, I think, is Investor State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS, and in large part because it has such far-reaching public health implications, from IP to tobacco to regulation of food, et cetera. Really, the list kind of goes on and on, and I think one of the big issues with ISDS is there is such uncertainty about where the ability for corporations to challenge domestic laws will kind of end. So it's not even necessarily clear entirely what's at stake, but certainly when similar provisions have been included in other smaller scale trade agreements, they've been used to challenge sort of evidence based public health laws. And I think a huge example is the ongoing issues with tobacco control measures in Uruguay currently. ISDS is particularly terrifying because it provides new and novel opportunities for those multinational corporations to challenge any laws that threaten their interests, and it operates outside of any existing system of accountability and transparency, with the cases really adjudicated by three attorneys. And according to UNCTAD, there have been more than 500 cases through 2013. Due to some of those existing ISDS provisions, and of these, 31% of the cases have been adjudicated in favor of the investor, 28% have been settled. So that's a more than 50% sort of win rate overall for the investor, which in most cases is large multinational corporations. In terms of other issues that are at stake for health, so the recent leaked text of the second version of the IP chapter sort of paints a troubling picture there. And of course, the IP provisions will similarly be subject to challenge under ISDS provisions if those are incorporated. But this most recent chapter includes, of course, evergreening patent linkages, removal of the recognition of Article 31 of TRIPS, and a potential three-step test for compulsory licensing, elimination of damages for patent infringements by biosimilars when not disclosed to competitors, which is potentially at odds with the key provision of the ACA, and proposed transition periods for data market exclusivity in an effort to kind of extract more stringent IP protections. And of course, there's all kinds of other additional concerns about environmental protection, regulation, healthcare services, SPS measures, even access to higher education, really the social determinants of health, in large part, are kind of underlying a lot of these issues and social inequality. So obviously the TPP has some transparency problems. There's no publicly available text. There's preferential access to draft text for industry, and that's a function of the advisory committees, which I will talk about here. So there are four sort of main mechanisms, formal mechanisms, for stakeholder engagement with the TPP. There's comment submission, which will be discussed shortly, advisory committees, stakeholder meetings, and direct stakeholder engagement. So the advisory committees are subject to the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which is another purported way that the USTR engages stakeholders in negotiation. And in theory, sort of advisory committees are required to be fairly balanced under the ACA, or under the FACA. In reality, they operate with a three-tier structure, with those advisory committees having hundreds of members with access to classified documents subject to non-disclosure agreements, and overwhelmingly corporate interests are represented on those entities. There's been quite a bit of work done by members, I think, of the Forum and CPAF and KEI to kind of expose the lack of transparency and unrestrained corporate influence in those bodies. And, of course, the USTR announced earlier this year the creation of the Public Interest Trade Advisory Committee in response to a lot of the criticism. Stakeholder meetings and conference calls with Ambassador Froman and or negotiators have been convened by the USTR often in D.C. Throughout sort of the TPP negotiations between rounds to sort of provide updates and solicit input. And the focus of the rest of the presentation is going to be on the sort of direct stakeholder engagement at the TPP rounds, which is a strategy that's been cited by the USTR to address many of the transparency concerns that have been raised by civil society about the TPP negotiations, as well as, coincidentally, the TTIP. So the direct stakeholder engagement at TPP rounds consists of designated on-site events, usually a day, to interact with TPP negotiators and delegates. And according to USTR data, TPP rounds have been held in the U.S. have been attended by hundreds of stakeholders. So these on-site events kind of vary tremendously and are generally organized by the party hosting the round of negotiations, whichever country that might be. And each stakeholder day and stakeholder forum has been a little bit different. Most of the stakeholder days include some form of stakeholder presentations during which stakeholder organizations could register and present sort of comments, positions, concerns, really whatever they wanted at a designated time, presumably with the expectation of attendance by relevant negotiators. The time allotted for these presentations was sort of progressively reduced during the later rounds of TPP negotiations. So initially stakeholders were given 15 minutes. By the end, they were allocated only 7 minutes. And presentations were scheduled concurrently in multiple rooms, often with similar related presentations occurring concurrently. So most of the stakeholder forums included a stakeholder briefing, where chief negotiators would offer brief remarks to update stakeholders about progress and then answer questions, although notably, even in that last round in Brunei, there was not such a briefing. A few stakeholder forums offer the opportunity for stakeholders to register for a table during a designated session with the expectation of interaction directly with negotiators. And a few stakeholder events, notably round 17 in Lima and round 19 in Brunei, included organized informal receptions during which stakeholders could, in theory, directly interact with negotiators. So this slide provides some basic descriptive information about what organizations participated in stakeholder presentations at three of the sort of later rounds of negotiation for which there was accurate and comprehensive data available. So total number of stakeholder presentations were pretty consistently between 30 and 60 at the later rounds, although early stakeholder events had fewer presentations registered. For example, there were only 6 at the first San Francisco round in 2010. There's slightly less than half of presentations were from corporate or business groups, including trade groups. And across these three events, 40% of presentations addressed public health issues directly, with 40.7% of these presentations from industry, meaning that more than half the presentations across these events came from nonprofit or academic organizations or individuals. Health professions organizations, whether public health, nursing, pharmacy, or medicine, accounted for only 4.4% of presentations overall. And of note, half of the health professional organizations participating were student health professional organizations, although none not depicted here, direct patient or consumer representation was also relatively limited. So this slide just kind of provides an overview of some of the public health presentations of these three rounds by sort of issue area or topic. And overwhelmingly, more than 70% of the presentations focused on access to medicines or intellectual property. And not surprisingly, almost all industry presentations focused on IP, either pharmaceutical or medical devices. So some trends in terms of the stakeholder forums. Certainly, there was some variation between the rounds in terms of composition of stakeholders, as well as the structure of stakeholder opportunities for engagement. Compared to other TPP stakeholder engagement activities, public health seems to be relatively well represented, although very, very focused on access to medicines and intellectual property. I'd also acknowledge a sort of conceptual difficulty in parsing out sort of the public health from the larger social determinants of health at stake in the TPP, I think another really important trend is sort of the very limited health professional representation, particularly within public health, which might represent a missed opportunity in terms of at least symbolically indicating the importance of these negotiations and more importantly, providing evidence and to draw from in order to at least make a case for promoting or advancing public health in these agreements. So, direct stakeholder engagement, valuable or valueless? Obviously, it's kind of premature and difficult to assess what, if any, impact direct stakeholder engagement has had on the ultimate outcome of negotiations, given that there's not been an outcome yet. There are some key limitations in the executions of these events, though, that made it very difficult to imagine their value, particularly for health advocates. So negotiator attendance and attention varies significantly at presentations. A concern at TPP rounds has been that negotiators are often not in the room for stakeholder presentations, so often presenters are sort of preaching to the choir of other similarly minded organizations. And even when negotiators are present, few questions or opportunities for engagement are really presented. So for civil society, the lack of transparency in the draft text or even substantive status of negotiations makes it very, very difficult to provide a relevant presentation because you have no idea what you're arguing against or what evidence is actually needed to be presented. And this puts civil society at a strategic disadvantage relative to industry, who has access to these documents by virtue of the advisory committees. And although the explicit goal of stakeholder activities is the opportunity to engage with negotiators, many stakeholder forums impose significant, very stringent barriers to such engagement. So limited access was particularly challenging, for example, in Auckland in 2012, when registered stakeholders were exclusively provided access to areas where only the stakeholder presentations took place. So the stakeholders were prohibited from areas where negotiators actually met. And in Leesburg in 2012, the USTR let stakeholders set up tables to interact with negotiators, but this event was on a resort property where stakeholders were located in a building that required negotiators to literally walk across the property, which was a huge deterrent for them to actually make it over there. Other challenges for stakeholders include limited notice of stakeholder events, short, very poorly advertised registration periods, and often difficult to access and very expensive venues. In exotic locations. So, some final thoughts. As I mentioned at the beginning, the last full round of TPP negotiations was held in Brunei in 2013. And so negotiations are kind of proceeding more and more behind closed doors. There's no formal stakeholder opportunities on the TPP side. Of course, the TTIP negotiations are still ongoing, and there's the stakeholder days or forums in that environment. But the opportunities to influence negotiations overall are limited. I mean, the four sort of pathways that were identified earlier are arguably not particularly meaningful. And the leaked text suggests that current advocacy, particularly from the public health community, has been relatively limited in its effectiveness. So the question is how to kind of address that issue. I mean, one would be to demand more from direct stakeholder engagement moving forward, to demand accessibility, a lot of very, very basic things, negotiators participating, attendance, those types of things. But at the end of the day, is that really going to be a counterbalance to a lot of the corporate influence that comes through things like advisory committees and preferential access to documents and the ability to engage more readily? Whether or not there's symbolic value to the continued engagement and participation of stakeholders in these activities, I think is another reasonable question, particularly from the public health community. And in terms of presenting a lot of the evidence that's out there to support a lot of the concerns around tobacco control, around ISDS generally speaking, so a lot of the public health interventions that I think this community supports so ardently and has, of course, a robust research base to support. And I think certainly kind of looking at the sort of scope of the stakeholder presentations at these last few rounds, there's been a dearth of a representation beyond IP and access to medicines, which of course are very important issues and are very closely correlated to ISDS. But you know, the issues even beyond tobacco control, so alcohol control, the regulation of sugar sweetened beverages or food safety, environmental protection, all those issues seem to kind of get lost, or at least the public health dimension. So looking at organizations like APHA and other professional organizations who have priorities and like I said, who kind of support a lot of those public health interventions, it seems that there's many potential ways in which this new generation of trade agreements will, you know, undermine a lot of those efforts. And in the absence of a better, more robust way to engage stakeholders, it seems like that voice has the potential to really be lost. I think starting with a more specific set of demands around direct engagement and direct access to negotiators could be a potential starting point for addressing a lot of the challenges around stakeholder engagement, but certainly not an end point and a place where further advocacy and research is required with that.
So I can tell you, as I've presented at one of these stakeholder engagement activities in San Diego, no one from USTR shows up. They usually schedule you in a room that is far away from all the real activity. And you basically are preaching to the choir. More people that are interested in your particular area. Although we did get a booth and we got some, you know, interaction there. But this is a very good case study for why that level of transparency may be more for stats for USTR than it is for actual impact. So moving on, we're going to be talking about actually looking in a little bit more in-depth at the comments that Elizabeth mentioned, which is another forum for providing your input about the TPPA. And Hadi's going to be talking about that. Dr. Hadi Mamudu, which I always get wrong, even though we have the same advisor, we have the same advisor as PhD students a long time ago, obtained his PhD from West Virginia University and had a postdoctoral training in health policy and health services research from UCSF. He's now an assistant professor at the College of Public Health in East Tennessee State University. He does research in global tobacco control, as well as tobacco use and control on college and university campuses in the state of Tennessee, and he recently co-authored a book, Global Tobacco Control, Power, Policy, Governance, and Transfer. So let's welcome him.